That RJ's a thoughtful fella. He knows. We've been working together, you know, for the past couple of years as I've been the district superintendent. But in the last year, RJ has become the director of our district board of ministerial development. So I work with RJ as closely as I do with any other pastor in our district, and he does a great job in that role. So he's beginning to know who I am, and I'm beginning to know who he is and what makes us tick and all that kind of stuff. And here's the kind of guy your pastor is. What he's discovered about me is that I appreciate certain things, and I don't know if he knows that, like, everybody has their own kind of unique love language, right? You know what yours is, all right? Mine is acts of service. I don't know if RJ knows that or not, but he knows I have kind of a weird deal with germs, which makes life on the road and in hotels a little difficult, but then when I come to visit churches, I always get somebody's headset that, you know, they preach into week after week, and maybe they sweat a little bit, maybe they spit a little bit when they talk, and then they spit onto this, and then it touches your face, and those things go through my mind. So when RJ handed this to me this morning, he said, "Just want you to know I disinfected this before I gave it to you." And I just felt love in that moment. So thanks, RJ. The weather, not so much the love, but this feels clean and it feels like love to me. I was also thinking as I was sitting there about this pulpit, and you have to really think ahead of time and do the zipper check down there because there's no place to hide up here. So thought all those things through. I want to tell you some stories today. I am the district superintendent. We have five states that Kim's here with me this time. Actually, this church was the very first. I got elected like on a Saturday, and then we flew down to Texas and closed in our house, flew back after a few days, and this was the first church I visited as district superintendent. So kind of making my way back through the churches now. And part of what we do with we have somewhere around 65 churches, depending on how you want to define what a church is, somewhere around 65 that we work with over the five states. And so that can be a daunting task. So part of what I do is figure out, like, Jesus, what do you want me to do with these 65 churches in those five states? Somewhere around 41 million people in those five states. What do you expect of us? And where do you even know to begin on what to do in this role? What do you do with each church? What is each church expected? And so you just start to break it down by this. There's a parable, and I'm not going to start with this parable, but this will give you a little bit insight as to what we're trying to do as a district and challenge each church to do within that district. Okay, so let me just start though with a pop quiz. All right, this one, you know, if you've been around the church for any amount of time, you might be able to get this one. But we'll just little pop quiz. Jesus said to go into all the world and make. Yeah, most of you got that one. That's pretty good. Well, the thing about it is that's what he said to do, but in the church. And over the last couple thousand years, we've tweaked it a little bit. I don't know if we consciously tweaked it, but we've tweaked it. Instead of like going to the world to make disciples, a lot of what we think we're doing is going out into the world to make converts. Which I understand you have to have a convert to make a disciple, but we kind of stop there. We see if we can get someone to like sign on to, you know, Christianity or to like say the prayer or to check the box or to do whatever we want them to do so that we can say, okay, you're in, you go to heaven. And then we struggle to take them from that point of conversion and do the thing that Jesus actually said to do, to make the disciple. Now, what that requires of us in the church at large, we just talked about the Holy Catholic Church, what it requires of the church universal is to help people do the things that Jesus said to do. That's basically what a disciple is, to walk in the footsteps of a master and do what the master says. And that's kind of how he expounded on it. He just said, make disciples, teach them to obey everything that I told you about. Just all the stuff I've been telling you the last few years, tell them everything and help them to obey it, because in that they will find the life they were created to live. Now, the disciples thing, the convert thing. So, given that task of making disciples, Jesus realized that not everybody is either cut out for it. Everybody's invited to this, but not everybody's going to respond in a way that he's able to say, do this, and they do it because he said to do it because he's the master. And so there was kind of a test that Jesus would give some of his disciples to see if they would actually do what he says to do. There's a story I like to tell of a test in my life where I realized who the person I was supposed to marry was. Here's the story. It's kind of a long story, and I'll put a disclaimer at the beginning of the story that no one should repeat or do the things I did in this story. Okay? Because I've been scolded by parents who said I gave their kids bad ideas after telling the story. So do not attempt this at home type of thing. When I was about 16, and you just, you know, at that age, that long ago, just starting to figure out, you know, the dating thing, right? And you've really noticed the opposite sex at that point, and trying to figure out, you know, how do I get one of them to, like, spend time with me and all that. You remember those days? Okay. So when I'm about 16 years old, wasn't really a dater at the time, but, you know, your school would have an event, and you got to invite maybe a girl to one of these events. So my school had a sports banquet that I was able to invite somebody to attend with me. And all the I went to a very small Christian school, and there wasn't really great options at that school, so you had to go outside of your pond a little bit. And so there was another Christian school in another town that we used to play in basketball, and we'd heard about this family and like met them once, that there was a family of six kids, and the two oldest were twin daughters, and they were kind of cute, and so we played this school at one point, and I talked my parents into asking the parents of the twin daughters to see if they would go out for pizza after the game. So they did. So we're all there at this pizza place, and I couldn't tell the twin daughters apart at all. So I caught my mom off to the side and just said, you got to figure out which one of these I'm supposed to ask, because I have no clue which is which, and I don't even know, you know. So she asks the girl's mother, Billy's going to ask, you know, would like to ask one of them to the sports banquet, all that kind of which one, kind of. And so the mom says, well, Kim's had a boyfriend, or at least gone on a few dates. Angie never has, so maybe Angie's turn. So it sounded good to us. So called Angie up, said, would you like to go to this banquet? She said, yes. So I asked Angie out to this banquet, and we had an okay time. She's just, you know, she was very polite, very kind, super quiet. Like you know those people who just you try to start conversations and it's yes, no, thank you, please. That kind of minute, just like pulling teeth to get the next line going. I'm not much of a talker myself, so I need somebody else to carry the conversation. So this date was super quiet and polite. So you know, it was just like, but you know, nice girls are not, you know, just around every corner, so you know, especially when they're kind of pretty. So I kept at it. So a few months later, asked her to go bowling with some friends or go to a movie or something like this. And so over the course of the next year or so, was asking Angie out, and I would go home just kind of frustrated, like, this just isn't getting anywhere. It just feels so cold, and she's nice, and I like her, comes from a good family, all those things that maybe you want, but it's just, the chemistry is just like, we're not connecting at, you know, at that level. So one night, this time I'm about This is probably a year and a half, 2 years later, and I've just been off and on. I asked her to do something every once in a while. So one of these nights, I said, "Hey, do you want to go to? I've got a basketball game. Show up. We'll go do something afterwards." So she gets somebody drop off at the game, and we go out. And I'm realizing this date's going better than normal. Like, we're actually finding things to talk about, and we're laughing, and it's fun, and like we're finally the hard work has paid off. So I'm feeling great about it, and I start to take her home, and she says, "I need to tell you something." I'm like, "Oh, great. Now that we're finally hitting it off, she's dumping me." But here's what she says. She says, "I'm not Angie. I'm really Kim. We switched on you. Ha ha ha. You're the one that can't tell us apart and all this." So she's laughing and I feel embarrassed and like I'm the fool, which I was. And so she was, so this whole time, and then like I take her home that night and I'm like, well, it did go better than the other one. So I'm starting to think these things like, did I ask the wrong one and my mom screwed this up and all this stuff. But how do you just switch? You can't just call, they're twin sisters. They sleep in the same room. They're best friends. You can't just say, "Hey, you're out. This one's in." That's just not going to work. So I had to figure this out. Like, is she really the one? I don't know. I've been spending time with Angie, but now this Kim thing is making me all confused. And so, and then there was the revenge thing where they had just begun to tell this story to everybody, all of our friends, how stupid I was that I did not know which was which. And I said, "I will get you back someday. Here's how I got her back." This was probably 6 months later, and at this point, I had, part of my strategy was I began to just ask both of them out at the same time. So I'd say, "Hey, do you want, we're just going to go hang out with some friends, we'll come by, pick you both up, and we'll just go." And then they tell me later, they were confused, like, which one is he asking? And that was part of the, like, genius. I didn't want them to know which was which. So I go pick them up and said, "We're going to go meet some friends at somebody's house." So I go pick them up, and they lived kind of out in the country. So I'm driving, and I said, "Man, I'm having some car trouble. I got to pull off here." So I pulled off into a very dark, secluded road, and they are saying, "No, don't go here. This is a dangerous place to be. Don't go here. Just keep going. Just stay on the main street. Stay where there's some lights." I said, "It'll be okay. I just need to get off the road." So I go off in this dark, secluded area with woods all around. And so I get out of the car, I pop the hood, and I'm under there, no clue what I'm doing, but just kind of looking around. And here come my best friends, Mark and Johnny, out of the woods. They're just walking. Now, they have ski masks and carrying baseball bats. And so I hear from inside the car some screams, "Get in the car, we have to go, there's people coming." And I turn around and I start yelling at these two figures in ski masks carrying baseball bats. And they're yelling back and the girls are screaming and we start staging the greatest WWE fight ever. And they're throwing me across the hood of the car. They got me down on the ground kicking me. They're just pretending it's dark. The girls can't see what's going on. And we're just laughing and laughing and the girls are screaming. And this goes on for a couple minutes until the car starts. And we're off on the side, and the car's over here, and somebody puts the car into gear and starts to leave. And so the screaming starts to get, you know, further away. And I say, "Guys, you gotta let me up, because, you know, this is before cell phones. I'm like, if they get out of here, they're calling the police and we're gonna be in big trouble for what we've done." And so they let me up, and I start chasing the car. I finally see the brake lights come on. I get to the car, and I open the car door, and they say, get in, and I'm laughing, and they're like, "What is wrong with you?" And they're crying. Now here's, and then we, you know, Johnny and Mark take their ski masks off, and it's fun for half of us. Now, here's the conversation that had been going on inside the car. Angie was in the back seat and had been saying, "We have to go, we have to go, we have to go." And Kim's saying, "We can't leave him. What are you talking about?" And Angie's saying, "He's already dead." This is the quote. "He's already dead, and if we stay here, we'll be dead too." And Kim says, "We're not leaving." Angie jumps in the front seat, starts the car, while Kim is trying to talk her out of leaving. Now, that's the story they told me. I assume it's true. So as I got to processing the whole evening, realizing which one is for me, which one is for me, which one is for me, realizing one of them was going to leave me for dead. And one of them was going to stay with me and maybe die with me. I think that might be the one. And that's the one sitting here. So I tell the whole story because I think maybe we underestimate the tests, the crisis moments, and the way we conduct ourselves in those hard moments. And it reveals a little bit about our character, what we're willing to do, and all, and we don't even know it's happening, but it's revealing who we really are. Jesus had a way of testing people like this. So in the same way that we had a little bit of fun with it, but I realized there's one that will actually die with me. I'm pursuing that one. Jesus, when he began to call his disciples, so we're talking about disciple is one who will go wherever Jesus says to go, do whatever Jesus says to do. He starts going around inviting just a select few in the beginning to be these disciples. There's a story in Luke 5, if you want to read about it, I'll just summarize it for you, there, where he's beginning to tell the good news of the kingdom, and he's inviting a select few disciples to spend like all the time with him. So he comes up, Sea of Galilee, there's Peter and some others, they're fishing. Peter's been out all night long, the story says. Out all night like fishing. He had like the whole, you ever had one of those nights just out working all night, just didn't get anything done, and you're just frustrated at the end of your, you know, it's his job, so it's the end of his shift, the end of his time working, and nothing much to show for it except for lack of sleep and maybe some, you know, blisters and just, it's been a horrible night. And Jesus comes along in the morning, and Peter, you have to just put yourself in Peter's place. He's tired and frustrated. You can't relate to that probably, but you've never been there. He's tired and frustrated. And Jesus comes along, and he kind of stands beside Peter as Peter's washing the nets, getting ready for another night. And he starts teaching the people, and the crowds are starting to come. And so he's like getting to the edge of, and the crowds are starting to push. It says, Peter, can I just borrow your boat for a minute? I'll just jump out in your boat and teach from there. Peter's like, sure. And realizing this means my day will be longer. And I just want to go home, get some sleep, get cleaned up, all this. But Jesus is here. Sure, Jesus, take my boat out. And so Jesus teaches, sends the crowds away. And then he looks to turn around to Peter and says, you want to go do some fishing? And Peter's like, been doing that all night long. And they're not there today. But, sure, let's go, Jesus. And Jesus says, you know, you get out there, and Jesus, who's like a known rabbi, so people would call him teacher, he's studied, he's accomplished, he has a little bit of a reputation by this point, but not as a fisherman. Peter, the fisherman by trade, Jesus, the rabbi, they're out on the boat. And Jesus says to Peter, put your nets over there. And here's what must have been going through Peter's mind. You, the like book learning teacher, is telling me, the professional fisherman, where to put the nets, right? He doesn't say this out loud. I'm just assuming this is what he's thinking, right? So Jesus says, put the nets over there. And Peter says, what he actually says was, Jesus, we've been out all night long, haven't done any good at all. Implication, can I just go home and sleep? But here's what Peter's realizing. He's heard Jesus teach, and he's realizing there's something special about this one. He's heard rabbis before, but there's something special about this one. Somebody I'm willing to follow and obey. So here are the words. We've been out on the line, no luck, but because you say so, I will. Because you say so, I will. You want to know the line of the disciple? Because you say so, I will. I don't get it. This is confusing. This is a little bit annoying to me, maybe. This is going to cause a little bit more work. A disciple might think all those things, but the disciple says this. because you say so, I will. And he puts the nets down. They bring up all these fish, and Peter realizes a miracle has just happened. And actually kind of what he says is, Jesus, I'm a sinful man. Go away from me. And Jesus responds, no, I'm not going away from you. I want to invite you to follow me because you think this is something special. I want to teach you how to fish for men. Come and follow me. Because he sees in Peter someone who's willing to obey. Obey even in the midst of confusion. Obey even in the midst of frustration, of fatigue. Willing to obey. And that's the kind of person Jesus is saying, follow me. And this is the life of the disciple. We follow Jesus into places that we probably wouldn't have picked ourselves. We follow Jesus into relationships that might be inconvenient, maybe a little bit annoying. But we think Jesus is doing something. We think Jesus is taking us somewhere. And so as a disciple, we say, I don't get it. But because you say so, I will. So I want you to think about now the things in your life that you would say, these don't make sense. These things are difficult. These things are hard. These are not the things I would have chosen for myself. If I could give these up, I would. All those things. Maybe things that you've assumed were just like bad luck. Now I want you to think of them in terms of, could this be building some sort of character in a way that without these things, I could not grow in this way? Maybe these are like tests. Like Jesus would do this all the time. People would come up, ask a question, and Jesus would ask a question, see how they respond, and that would reveal something to them about themselves. See, these hardships that we face, these frustrations, these obstacles that we don't really choose, but they're there, they reveal something about us. They reveal a condition of our heart. Are we willing to follow? Are we willing to obey even when it doesn't make sense? The disciple is invited into this kind of a life. There would be, so when you look at the way to see what Jesus has entrusted to you and the way he invites you to follow him, there's another story. This one's in Matthew 25. It's called the parable of the talents, but it's kind of a bad name because a talent is a sum of money, and we don't refer to money as talents. We call talent something else. But so think of a parable of a talent would be a parable of the sums of money, or bag of gold is one way to look at it. So the parable of the bags of gold, it might be called. Here's a story. This is like maybe about 3 years later than the calling of Peter on the Sea of Galilee. Now Jesus is in the last week of his life on earth. He's about ready to die, and he starts to tell these stories to now his disciples that have gathered around, that have followed him, and he's about to leave, and he's given them some instructions about how they are to conduct themselves, what he's expecting of them from here on out. And he tells this story. He said, there was a master. He knows he's about to go away, so he's telling a story of a master who goes away and entrust his servants with things. So there were three servants of this master, and the master called these servants together, and he gave them each according to his ability, is the phrase that's used in Scripture, each according to his ability, these bags of gold. So the first servant looks at him, says, I've been watching you work. I think you're capable of investing, growing five talents or five bags of gold. So here, take these five, grow my kingdom with it. I'm going to go away, I'll come back, check on you. Second servant, here are two bags of gold, same thing. Third servant, here's one bag of gold to get you started. The master goes away for a while, comes back, calls the three servants together, and he says, okay, I've been gone for a while, now I'm back. What did you do with what I gave you? I entrusted you with five, two, and one. Call you to account here. So first servant, five bags. He says, you gave me five. I doubled it. Here are now 10. And here are the words of the master. Maybe you've heard them before. Hopefully you'll hear them again. Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a little. Come and share in your master's happiness, is what Jesus responds with. It's like, you were a servant, now come and share in some of the reward. So I'm like bringing you into a deeper level. Share with my happiness. See this kingdom of ours now from my perspective, more or less. So, second servant, you gave me two, here now four. Well done, good and faithful servant. Same thing. Third servant, you gave me one bag. And I don't know what the third servant might have been thinking. You know, it's a parable. It's a story that Jesus is telling. And so the third servant might have been thinking something like, it's just one bag. You didn't give me five. You didn't expect much of me. So you probably, like, no big deal, right, master? Wrong. He said, I didn't want to lose it. I maintained it. Isn't maintaining something good, master? Wrong. Master looks at the third servant, and he calls this third servant wicked and lazy. Wicked because you didn't do what I told you to do. Lazy because you didn't even try to do anything. Wicked and lazy. Take the one from this one, give it to the one with 10, because I can trust this one with more. The testing of our walk following Jesus. Now, I want you to think back to the day. Maybe you can't remember the day. Maybe you were young. Maybe it just was a gradual process. But think about the time when you started, like, following Jesus. Maybe it was a day. Maybe it was a season. Think about when you said, I will follow you. If you're not there, maybe today's the day. Maybe today is the day you say, I'll follow you. So this is a big day. But think about that day, whether it's today or 50 years ago. How many of you showed up and got your bags of gold? Nobody got your bags? Well, they must. Maybe there's something more valuable. Maybe there's something in the kingdom that the bags of gold are a metaphor about. You know, so then you start to ask, well, what's the most valuable thing in the world? What's the most valuable thing in the kingdom to the master? What's of highest value? What is it? It's people. So when you start to look at and think in terms of this, you are that servant who's been entrusted with a certain number of bags of gold. Now start to see those bags of gold as the people in your life. Because gold is not nearly as valuable as the people in your life. So now let's just start to picture your family, your friends, your neighbors, your coworkers, as those bags of gold that have been entrusted to you, not by chance. And there is a watching, and there's an expectation that goes along with what you've been entrusted with those bags of gold that are in your life, that you might see them as an annoyance. You might see them as a frustration. Like, I don't want this bag of gold. Can you take it back, please? Do you have any of those relationships? The hard ones? But there is something about those relationships and those connections, those people around you that are no accidents. Not, you know, maybe you don't even know their name, but you see them. Do you see other people this way, that there is not another person in this world, no matter what they look like, what they act like, what their preferences are, all those things, but what God loves them dearly? So he looks at gold and thinks, I made a lot of that, and it's kind of expendable. He looks at a person and says, that's a child, whether lost or found, that's a child that I love. You want to know what's valuable to God? They're sitting next to you. They're the relationships in your life that have been entrusted to you, uniquely entrusted to you. And there is a time where Jesus shows up once in a while and says, what have you done with those bags that I entrusted to you, those bags of gold, those precious people that I've put in your life? Have you multiplied those relationships? Have you taken good care of those people? Have you taken the 5 friends I gave you and leveraged that into 10 friends? What have you done with what I've given you? And it's important to be good stewards of money, property, all that stuff. Stewardship, very high priority in the kingdom. Nothing is as high of a priority to be good stewards of the relationships in your life. The people out there that have been entrusted to the people in here. How are we doing? How do we leverage this relationship to win those? See, we sometimes hesitate. This whole, because you say so, I will, there's sometimes a hesitation when Jesus says to do something, and maybe you feel a nudge from like the Holy Spirit every once in a while. It says, talk to that person. Show some love to that person. Invite that person to church. Go visit that person. And we maybe sense those nudges from the Holy Spirit. And we can respond with a, seriously, God? Do you know how difficult that person is? Or we can respond with a, I don't get it, but because you say so, I will. But there's a hesitation. Now the greatest disciples, and I'm not one of them, just sense God's leading, and there's just a reaction, just because you say so, I will. Because you say so, I will. And not robotic, but just an immediate response in obedience. That's the path of the disciple. But in most of us, I would say there's a hesitation. A hesitation because we're not sure what he's going to ask us to do and what it's going to require of us. So the last story. Okay. This is now several weeks after the parable of the bags of gold. Now Jesus has died, he's risen from the dead, and he's been revealing that he's alive to hundreds of people around Israel. And he tells his disciples to meet me up on top of a certain mountain on a certain day. So they're all up there waiting on him, and they know he's alive because he's shown himself to them on several occasions. He says, meet me on the mountain, implying, I've got some final instructions for you up there. So they go. They know he's alive. They've been able to eat with him, interact with him, touch him. They know he was dead, now he's alive. But here's what he says. All the disciples are gathered. Eventful few weeks, I'll tell you that. And he says, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. So that's not a throwaway line. All authority means I have overcome the thing that would get us all, death. I have beat death. I have taken everything the enemy can throw at me, and I have overcome. That means I'm the boss. So in that line, all authority in heaven and earth has been given to me means I am the boss, I am the king, I am in charge. And they're hearing him saying, yes, you are. You are in charge. And we really don't see Jesus until we see him as that, as king of all. We sang about that today. Hopefully we mean that, king of all. That's what he means. I have all authority. Okay, so that's established, all authority. And then he says, therefore, go and do what? Make disciples. At the end of all of this, all of the teaching, the miracles, the crucifixion, and the resurrection, he says, now that I have authority, here's what I'm telling you to do. Go make disciples. You're a disciple, which means you do what I tell you to do. Go and do this thing. Make other disciples. Teach them. Help them to understand everything that I've told you. And there's a funny reaction with the disciples. You would think, in this setting, the reaction, the response would be something like, yeah, let's do it, let's go. You did it, you won. There is a peculiar response where it says, some believed, but some doubted. What would you doubt? You saw him take a punishment that no other human could survive. You saw him crucified. He was dead. He was in the tomb. Now he's alive. What are we doubting here? Sinless life, power to teach, power to... What are we doubting? The word doubt could also mean hesitate. Hesitate. So some believed, and the word believe means follow and obey, but some hesitate, some doubted, some are hesitating. I want to know where you might be today. Because there's probably not anybody that would come into this room and just say, absolutely no way, Jesus, right? Because you're in church. You're probably not saying that. Unless somebody just dragged you here and made you sit here. But where are you with the belief? Or I'd say some of us get hung up on the hesitation. I mean, everybody there that day went up to the mountain. They were there. They were ready to hear the instructions. They're on the mountain. They're not saying, no way, never, Jesus. But they're hesitating. Hesitating. Hesitating because they're not sure they know what Jesus is going to say. And what if he asks me to do something that I don't want to do? What if he asks me to go somewhere I don't want to go? What if he asks me to talk to somebody I don't want to talk to? What if he asks me to forgive somebody I don't want to forgive? What if he asks me to love somebody I don't want to love? So before we start out on the, yes, let's go, Jesus, we're like, whoa, wait, what? You better tell me and explain to me everything you're going to ask me to do, and then I'll decide. Disciples don't get to say that. Disciples just say, because you say so, I will. Where are you today? Are you the because you say so? I don't care what it means. I don't care how much pain it brings to me. I don't care what it costs of me. I will go. I will follow. I will obey because you said so. Are you still hesitating because you're just not sure if he's going to ask you to do something unreasonable and uncomfortable? There's a line in the parable where Jesus says to the five bagger that multiplied by two and the two bagger that multiplied by two. He says, come and share in your master's happiness. If you're in the world of hesitation today, can I just encourage you that the life Jesus invites you into is the one of happiness? And if we're miserable doing it, we're doing it wrong. If we're hesitating because we're not sure if he's going to make us miserable, he says, I have come to give you life to the full. The best life possible is the one I'm offering and promising you. Come and share in your master's happiness. And I can tell you, there is nothing that makes, you want to know what that makes the angels celebrate, that gets them off their chair in celebration? It's when one lost person is found. That's the happiness. That's the celebration. That's the party. Come and share in your master's happiness. That's what the church is about. Making disciples to go make disciples. Come and share in that happiness. That's the life to the full. So if the hesitation is, I don't know if this life will be any good, it's the life to the full, because it's bringing the lost sheep home. And the angels celebrate. And we celebrate because we share in the Master's happiness. Let me pray for you. Father, you have invited us into a life that some of us have just tasted. And we've nibbled at it. We've dipped our toe into the waters of your life, but we're still hesitating. Let us see your goodness in a fresh way this morning. Let us see this full, happy life in a new way today. And walk into it and enter into this with whole hearts, with committed attitudes of, because you say so, I will. And those people in our lives that you've entrusted to us, people that we might not even like, people that we would prefer to avoid, help us to see them in a way that, yeah, they're difficult, but so was I. Help us to see them in a way that you see them, through your eyes, with your love. Give us your patience. Give us your words. All those, and when you nudge us, maybe it's something that will happen this afternoon, a nudge that we just respond, I don't get that, but because you say so, I will. And let us experience that full life that can only come through obedience, whatever that costs, whatever that looks like. We'll trust you for that life. In Jesus' name, amen.